Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 116. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Dave, but the real question is, how are you? It's been 2 weeks now.
It's Elvis 68, the comeback special. I'm dressed in black leather. I'm just ready to rock out.
The leather is a bit much, Dave. The leather
is a bit much. I mean, let's face it, I was out of form, out of touch. Adam the computer was saying I was like a comeback from NAMM during the shows. I'd gotten so dark and twisted. A lot of energy was going in the wrong directions, but I'm back and I'm ready to rock, man. I can tell you that much right now.
I mean, that sounds painful for me.
No, it will be painful for you.
Yeah.
And but during my, I had feverish dreams. At one point in my feverish dreams, my mother was here. And I actually said to her, "Give me a microphone. I got 2 hours in me." And I could barely walk at that point during the sickness. I said, "Give me a microphone. I got 2 hours."
I've never known anyone that gets sick and then just gets so insanely like fever driven sick in my life to the point where they're hallucinating.
I was.
Yeah. I mean, I was getting these texts, and I've spoken to a couple of other people who were also receiving texts at this time.
Sure.
And we're all like, "Is he actually dead? Is this
is the ghost?
Like, what's
at
going on?"
At one point, I thought I was dead. I was like, "Did I die? In a car accident, did I die?" I was like,
"You went full on dark side for a little while there."
Does that surprise you? But dude, I looked at my as I got better. I looked at my media intake. I looked at my Kindle thing on my phone. There were some dark choices being made. Some real dark choices. Punisher.
I've always questioned Punisher. It's, let's put that out there right now.
But I was like,
there's no sunshines and rainbows in that.
I was like, if I died, if this was my last show, at least I went out doing Punisher Invades the NAMM. I mean, there's just a cup of tea for everyone. Imagine if that was my last show. They'd be like, "Dave went out like how he lived." You know, fucking intense. Got to say some praise for Stu. Now, always praise for Stu, but there's two solo Time Machine Stu episodes which will be hitting, the podcasts over the next few days. I'm going to release them once I'm edit them out and put them up. So they will be coming. You'll be listening to this probably on like a Saturday in the States. I will be releasing two shows. Stu, did you do solo? Did you have any friends with you, Stu? What was the story?
No, two shorter solo shows.
Wow.
First one basically finished off what we were planning, Injection Trade.
That's it,
And all the news at the time. 115 was just a shorter show covering the news of the week.
Wow. Did you miss me during it? Were you like, "Where's this guy just interrupting
not
my points?"
No, not 1 second. No, there was no...
Wow, there was no nothing. Like, "Where's Dave? How is he?" You know? I was telling you to say stuff to the listeners as well.
Yeah, you were. Jeez. But you were in your fevered state, and I was reading it going... I'm not sure he actually means this.
My sister was like, it's rare for you to relinquish the captaincy reins, and it is. She knows how I like to, in general, be in charge. And but, Stu, you had to take the ball up the line, man.
There was no in charge with you that last 2 weeks. You were a long way from in charge.
I was out of it, man. So there's a new edict from me, which I'm already sick of, this whole I'm not going to be dark anymore. I've already realised that... I mean, I am going to stay dark, but I'm going to try to be a bit more filthy.
You say there's this new edict, but you put that in the show that you didn't do.
Okay, well...
So this has never gone out to the listeners
until
now.
Okay, but I'm letting them know.
And already,
that I had
you're backing down on it.
I had a hall of mirrors moment where I was like, "Dave, you've gone too dark." And I recognise that, and I've gone, okay, chopping me out of the NAMM, chopping me out, patch me up, and put me back loose in the real world. That's
You also said that episode.
What?
You were going to try to limit the military references because you felt it was offensive to actual veterans.
No, you didn't say that.
You did.
That's a misconstrue of what I was
I've
saying.
I've got that in writing. I have that in writing.
Fever dreams don't count. And you know I have a lot of respect for veterans.
That's exactly what you said afterwards.
Now, Stu, before I think we've gone long enough to my hall of mirrors. That's about as deep as it got, kids, by the way. It's not incredibly deep. It's like 5 minutes in there is too long for me. You know what I mean? It's like, put me in the isolation tank, and after a little while, I ain't got anything left. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could keep going, recording, but like...
Please don't.
Okay. Now, Stu, proud moment for you on the show. You must be very happy with yourself. Aladdin... We finally got fucking released. We mostly have been waiting for the results of this bet.
See, this for me was the most sure bet I have ever made in my life. I at no point was worried about this bet.
I thought I was a chance. I thought you were probably the favourite, but I thought I was a chance. But it turns out this is if my spies in the Imperial Court are to be believed.
Yeah.
James, Michelle's cousin, and his girlfriend, Becky, went and saw Aladdin, and I said to James, James, was there any mention, cameo of Robin Williams? No, there was no, as far as he was aware, no Robin Williams like audio use. There is some sort of reference on like a plaque or something, which you said could potentially, like much like in Jumanji, there was like a sort of like, there's some like millisecond reference to former, I think they show former images of the genie, one of them, which a painting or something of Aladdin, like the original Aladdin, the blue one.
Yeah, so they just showed a painting of the concert.
Yeah, which doesn't count. We needed to have actual Rob Williams like voice footage, which were our agreement.
Yeah, we were looking at like unused original recordings and that sort of stuff.
So you've won it. I mean, you must feel pretty proud because I think this is our original bet. This is one of our original bets.
Yeah, I mean.
So you're going to cash in a captain's call now? I mean, your story is captain's calls up, but I'm telling you, you've got to start unloading sometime.
I'm telling you, this whole captain's call thing is a flawed system at best.
You came up with it. You're the one
who. No, I didn't. It was you. Why would I come up with something called a captain's call, Dave?
I don't know.
That is 100% Dave, written all over it.
I don't know. I thought it was a good idea because that
means... Of course you thought it was a good idea. You came up with it.
Stupid quasar.
You came up with it.
Well, but this is the thing that I think listeners don't understand. I give you no restrictions. You give me restrictions. That's
No, no, no. You've made some poor choices and we've had to put some restrictions in there. You've made some very poor choices.
Well, okay, whatever. Post. You've got a captain's call. I hope you're keeping a tally because I'm not. Okay.
Yeah, great system, Dave. Great system.
Well, come on. That can be one of your jobs. That can be one of your little jobs. You can have a little... You
what must my little job? This is...
Three captain's calls that I've
so
got
demeaning. One of my little jobs, huh, Dave?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I'm sick of you being the leader already. I'm sick of it.
Oh, well.
I'm revolting.
Oh, well.
I mean, Aladdin...
You should be happy, though. Have you seen Aladdin?
No, I haven't. But all the news is saying that Robin Williams... Genie is kind of not touched with this movie.
Okay.
It's such a different take on the Genie by Will Smith.
Sure.
And all the songs have been altered and changed and there's actually been quite a bit of praise for Will Smith in that role, saying that...
I've heard some good but mixed reports, you know.
The movie itself is okay, is what I've heard.
Yeah.
But Will Smith is actually really quite good because he's done something so different.
That's cool.
And I think, that was the only way they could...
Yeah, you can't imitate what Robin Williams did.
No, because no one can. No one on the planet can. No.
Yeah, exactly.
And Will Smith is great at what he does.
Yeah, he is. I like Will Smith in general. So, for me, it's a streaming one. Michelle and I had that conversation the other day. We're going to watch it when it comes out on streaming. I'm not seeing it in cinemas. What about you, Stu?
No, I'll be streaming it.
Yeah, fair enough, man. I mean, God, like, but I am interested. And what I saw were mixed to good reports. You know, like, in that 7 out of 10 range.
Yeah, I mean, it did well in the box office. Did really it? Well. Opening weekend, $110 million.
See, I've been so out of having checked box office this week. Okay, so $110 million is a good opening.
Although, I believe that's the four-day, because it's the Memorial Day in America. I'm assuming that's the four-day weekend instead of the
but
typical two-and-a-half kind of thing.
Would have been an expensive movie to make, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, but, it's done well enough that it's going to be profitable.
Okay, cool. Well, I look forward to seeing it. I think MIB... International, whatever, comes out very shortly. I saw a...
there's been a few movies that have come out recently. Other than Detective Pikachu, which came out...
Have you seen that?
Not yet.
Okay.
It almost stopped Endgame.
Right.
Endgame remained at number one when it came out, but only just.
Right.
By like a couple of million.
Okay. So very close. So that's impressive business then.
Yeah. And then the week after John Wick Chapter 3 came out...
Yeah, I'm not so hot on John Wick after Chapter 2. I thought Chapter 2 was nowhere near as good as 1.
I agree, but I really wanted it to work so much more.
Have you seen John Wick 3?
I have.
Oh, good.
Really quite enjoyable.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. John Wick 1 is kind of the perfect...
Oh, I loved it.
...action movie, just adrenaline rush.
Yeah, for sure.
Where it's one unstoppable force coming up against bad guy after bad guy after bad guy. And it's just fun to watch.
Yeah.
But chapters 2 and 3, and by the way, these movies are all cut together, so they tell a story with no gaps in between them.
Okay, cool.
Like, the opening scene of 2 is like 2 minutes after 1.
I still like that, though. That's cool.
Yeah, and 3 does the same thing.
Okay.
And they're planning more, obviously, the way they ended it.
Yeah.
But 2 and 3 delved into the mythos behind it, and kind of more of the clans.
Yeah.
The kind of underside
of... What's the thing called? The society where they... The hotel or whatever it is? The Continental.
The Continental's the name of the hotel.
Yeah.
And in this one, they look more at the, like, the table, which was mentioned in number two.
Okay.
Which is like the heads of this assassins.
Sure.
Guild internationally.
Interesting concept. To be honest, that sounds interesting.
Very interesting concept, yeah. And I loved the story behind it.
Okay.
But the movie
How's Keanu?
Keanu's always great in these roles.
Well, sometimes he's phoning in like you wouldn't believe, but I mean, he's always enjoyable. Like,
but with the John Wick, I think he's...
Yeah.
That's the role that he's meant for, because there's no emotional range. It's like The Matrix all over again.
Yeah. Yeah, he's perfect for The Matrix.
Where he can play that kind of deadpanned...
Yeah. Sort of
a hero slash villain at the same time.
Yeah, there's something kind of very calm about a Keanu Reeves performance.
Yeah, and it works really well in this. Yeah.
Okay, well, again, I will watch it on the streaming. I mean, I do love Keanu, and I am interested in the franchise. John Wick 2 left me a little feeling like there wasn't much to it, but what you said of 3 sounds interesting.
Well, I think that they are struggling to balance between the story behind it all and then the action scenes.
Yeah.
And 1 was almost purely action, and it really worked.
Yes.
And I feel like they've tried to go a little too heavy with the stories and the...
Did you ever watch the movie Wanted that was based on comics, Angelina Jolie?
Wanted, yeah.
It's a great movie, I thought. Like, it was
about very enjoyable. Stuff, it's not a great movie, but it's very enjoyable
to watch. It's enjoyable, yeah. Just a fun movie. Like,
yeah, with James McAvoy. And,
yeah, I really like that one. Okay, well, that's interesting about John Wick. I mean, a lot of movies have come out. It just shows you, I think it maybe it's, you know, it's a changing in the guards, that I haven't been pressed to see any of these in cinemas, and yet I watch them on streaming. You know, that sort of says something, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, like you said, Pokemon's not your thing.
Oh, not Pokemon, but
and Aladdin. Aladdin's aimed at a much younger audience.
Yeah, we love Aladdin in this house, and you know,
But I think anyone that really loved the original, really loves Robin Williams as part of that.
Yes.
So I think it's very hard sell.
And I like the original songs too. I had the soundtrack.
Yeah, so it's quite a hard sell for someone like us.
Do they still do one jump ahead and stuff?
I believe they still do all the songs, but they're different. Kind of reworked.
Okay. Does Will Smith have to sing or rap or something?
So Never Had a Friend Like Me.
Yeah.
He's reworked that song. Okay. So it is more of an old school hip hop.
Okay. Cool.
Song.
Oh, I'm okay with that. Like, I mean, I sort of think that's fine. Like, you know, it's a remake.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
but like you was like what you were saying before about you weren't tempted to go.
Mm.
I mean, John Wick 2 wasn't the thing that grabbed you, so I understand not really rushing out to see 3.
Mm. MIB International is one which, I mean, if the reviews are good, I'd be tempted to take Michelle to.
See, Men in Black, for me, I looking at the trailers, it's skewing way younger.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll wait for them all, because you know what? They could be Saturday night movies you can just chuck on, you know?
I've rewatched Men in Black 1 the other week, and it's such a fun movie.
It's great. We watched it not long ago either.
Yeah.
It was a couple of months ago we watched Men in Black. And don't forget Bad Boys 3 is coming.
Yeah, well, maybe we can all forget Bad Boys 3 is coming.
Oh, I can't believe Bad Boys 3 is coming. No. It's more than 20 years since Bad Boys 2.
Yeah, and Martin Lawrence was out of shape then.
He was. I don't know how he is these days.
Yeah, it's not looking good for him.
Retired, almost. I mean, you know, very close to retirement. Now, Stu, did you hear this about Dark Phoenix? Ending was changed due to similarities with another superhero movie. James McAvoy said, the end of Dark Phoenix changed a hell of a lot. The finale had to change. There was a lot of overlap and parallels with another superhero movie that came out a while ago, and we had no idea. We were basically trawling through the source material, it seems. So Yahoo, which took this interview, suggests that Captain Marvel, which took place largely in space, may have conflicted with Dark Phoenix's space-bound finale, drawing on previous comments from director Simon Kinberg that Phoenix's character design was changed to make it less cosmic, potentially because of similarities to Carol Danvers' powered-up binary form. Now, what do you think about this, Joe? Interesting.
From what the quote James McAvoy is saying, like what he's saying, it doesn't sound like Captain Marvel to me.
What about Avengers Endgame, maybe, or something?
I was wondering whether it was X-Men Last Stand that it got a little too similar to.
Okay, well, that would at least make sense because it's the same basic story which they're ripping off from.
Yeah, but the idea that you've got one kind of powered up Dark Phoenix standing in the middle of a battlefield destroying everything.
I tell you what, I saw an incredible trailer for Dark Phoenix. There's a really good trailer that's out at the moment for Dark Phoenix.
Wasn't that hot on it?
I don't know. I loved it. I thought it looked really cool. Look, this is going to be the capper on the whole Fox X-Men thing. So I think just get out of the cinemas already, you know?
Well, the other thing, and I mentioned it on the show that you missed. So just to recap you, they released their early predictions for opening weekends. Now, these are all predicted numbers, so take them with a grain of salt.
Sure.
But it was predicted to do 50 million opening weekend, which would make it the worst performing X-Men movie of all time.
Oh, I don't think,
and that's not adjusting for inflation. That's,
I don't think it's going to do huge numbers.
Like, well, they're saying this is like the worst numbers.
Wow. Yeah. Well.
So below, like, think of the worst X-Men movie you can imagine. Under that.
Gee, I mean, yeah, quality-wise, the worst one was Last Stand by some distance, but that was actually...
Yeah, but I think the worst performing one was the Wolverine?
No, Wolverine Origins made money.
No, opening weekend, I don't think it made money opening weekend.
Wolverine Origins, it was number one. It just bombed after that. It opened at one. Wolverine Origins. X-Men First Class didn't do particularly well at the box office, I don't think. X-Men 3 Last Stand did do well, despite the fact it was not a good movie. The Wolverine might not have made much money, the second Wolverine movie. I mean, look it up, dude. I can't remember. I remember X-Men Origins opened reasonably well at one, and then it just collapsed after that. It had, you know, a huge drop off.
I remember there was a couple of movies around that $50 million opening. Yeah. Look, but most of them were significantly older.
I will say this. I think X-Men Dark Phoenix has all the momentum against it. You know what I mean? It's the last chapter, you know, in the Fox X-Men franchise, which was already struggling after Apocalypse. You know, it doesn't have a lot of hype on it. You know, all these other movies are stealing its oxygen, like your Endgames, your Captain Marvels. They're sort of not the cool kids on the block anymore, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how I kind of view them. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think it could easily be the worst performing. That doesn't mean it'll be a bad movie, though. It could still be a decent movie, you know?
I mean, it could be. It's.
I hope so. Like, you know, I'm interested to see what they do. But I'm also very interested in seeing what Marvel are going to do with the X-Men. You know, because as soon as this gets out, then Marvel can really... Studios can really look at doing X-Men, which I am very excited for.
Well, I mean, that's where we're all heading. This is where... all right, so The Wolverine is the worst performing, followed by X-Men First Class, followed by Apocalypse.
And The Wolverine isn't a terrible movie. Wolverine's a pretty decent movie.
It opened with 53 mil.
Okay.
And First Class was 55. Yeah. And this Dark Phoenix was predicted to do 50.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. That wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, having said that, we've seen predicted numbers inflate by literally 100%.
Yeah.
So.
Take it with a grain of salt.
If it does double, it's still not great, but it puts it in like fourth or fifth spot.
Are you going to cinemas to see it? I am, just to close it out.
I will be, but I think my expectations are pretty low.
My expectations are very moderate as well. Hopefully it's a lot better than Last Stand, which was genuinely a poor movie with a couple of good scenes. You know.
Yeah, and Apocalypse, which just felt like wasted potential. Apocalypse
was a real disappointment after Days of Future Past, which was so good.
Because they had a good cast going into it, and they just wasted it all.
Yeah, they just really fumbled the ball with Apocalypse, I thought. Like, it was just...
Yeah.
There's a lot of things didn't...
Just a lot of poor choices.
Yeah, exactly. And it's on everyone. It's on the writers, it's on the director and everything. It's not really the actors. It's the writers and directors that just should be taking the blame for Apocalypse.
I think I think the costume department, whoever put Oscar Isaac in that Apocalypse suit made a very poor choice.
Considering how cool Apocalypse could have been, like I'm sure Marvel will do it, like Age of Apocalypse. I'm sure Marvel Studios will do Age of Apocalypse movies and stuff, and they'll kick ass. I reckon whatever Marvel Studios do with X-Men will eventually just kick the ass of what Fox did, you know?
Yeah.
Like, long term. And they have some... advantages in that the superhero genre has been around now for 20 years in films, so they've learned from mistakes. But it's very odd, the whole Fox X-Men thing. They've turned in some really good movies, like Days of Future Past is a movie that I genuinely really enjoy, and yet they've turned in some real clunkers as well. It's interesting. And Simon Kinberg has been behind some of the clunkers as well. He's been on both sides of the table.
Yeah, he has been. He's been very up and down.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the first film he's directing as well.
Yeah.
So now James, Michelle's cousin, also announced there was a mistake in an end scene in Endgame. In the final battle, Wasp and Ant-Man are in the van trying to get the quantum tunnel operational. We cut back to the fight. We can see Ant-Man there too, fighting in his giant form. And he says, given the staggering complexity of the enormous battle scene, one slip up is entirely understandable. I wouldn't have picked it up in a million years. But, you know, did you pick it up, Stu? You are the man usually for these things.
No, I didn't. I wasn't watching for it.
But I don't think James picked up. I think he got it off some... I said to him...
Well, there are two mistakes that people have posted about, and that's one of them. That's the biggest one.
Okay.
The other is a continuity error in which... remember when Hulk's giving Scott the tacos after the Benatar lands and it blows his food away.
Vaguely.
And he kind of looks all sad, and then Hulk gives him a couple of tacos. And
vaguely, yeah.
There's a continuity error with how many tacos he's holding in different cuts. So
nothing.
He walks in with like four and walks away with one and gave two away. And
so these are basically nothing.
They're tiny errors at tiny points. Yeah. The one thing I did notice with Endgame, and I read this in this last week, the white suits they're wearing throughout the film,
yep.
They were never filmed wearing white suits. That's entirely CGI.
Okay.
That, to me, is so impressive because it looks...
Yeah, it looks flawless.
So well done.
Yeah. It's amazing what people don't question and don't notice unless they're being told to.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But, yeah, they hadn't finalized the design of those white suits, so they had the actors...
Are they the same suits that I ranted about?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But with a quantum...
I actually thought in this film they looked pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah, those were all 100% CGI, which is...
Yeah, well, there you go.
Impressively done.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I say, unless people are told to question the CGI, I think a lot of the time now they're getting away with it, you know? Because it's so good.
Well, I think people's standards are much higher now.
Yes.
Because you saw the backlash that the genie got from Aladdin in those trailers.
Yes.
Where the CGI wasn't great.
No.
It was very noticeable very quickly.
And did they fix that for the final film?
I don't know if they fixed it 100%, but...
Hmm.
Apparently he's not blue for that much of the film anyway. He's quite a small scene where he's blue and genie-like. Okay.
Right.
And then he's...
I'm interested to actually catch all that. I wouldn't mind seeing what they've done with it because, I mean, I really liked... I would have thought the remake of Jungle Book. I was so thinking this will be nothing like the original, like, in terms of quality. I loved the Jungle Book, you know, remake they did.
Yeah, the remake was really good.
Fantastic. I really thought it was fantastic.
Jungle Book was great. Dumbo was a flop.
Yeah.
And Lion King's meant to do big numbers.
Lion King, I saw the list of people. James Earl Jones is back.
He's back. He's doing that's the awesome. Fussle. That is, yeah.
That's awesome.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the perfect.
A lot of people, Lion King's one of their absolute favourites. It's close for me. I saw Lion King in Vegas in the Lion King Theatre. We went and saw it. The musical?
I've seen the musical, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't seen it. And there was we went to the actual theatre.
That was great.
Did it. It was awesome. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. No, so it looks like Disney's 3 out of 4.
That's good.
Or 2.5 out of 4 with Aladdin. It's
well, if they're making enough money, it doesn't matter, does it? Like
I don't know how bad Dumbo was financially for them, but
also Dumbo is not exactly was never exactly lighting anyone's imagination on fire. It was very much, you know, kind of grandpa's cartoon, you know.
Yeah, but it is one of the all-time classic. Sure. I mean, you can argue the Jungle Book's the same thing. Jungle Book came out before Dumbo did.
Or Rupert Kipling. Did the original.
Yeah, but the original Jungle Book came out well before Dumbo.
Long time ago. I had the books as a kid.
So you kind of... I don't think it's about the age of the original property that matters.
Probably not. I just didn't feel as much heat on Dumbo, that's all.
No.
I thought there was zero heat on Dumbo.
But getting back to Endgame, this week, it box office-wise, it is now less than 100 million away from Avatar.
Okay.
And this is on its first release.
Yeah.
But... It looks as though it won't make Avatar's numbers on initial release.
Okay.
It's slowing down now. It's going to fall a little short.
Yeah, the heat's finally slowing down off it.
It is slowing down, and it's done really well, like, to hold out as long as it has.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's got some stiff competition. Aladdin's now out,
yeah,
which is really going to hurt it.
The kiddie market.
But it looks like Disney will be re-releasing it in combination with Spider-Man.
Cool.
And in combination with the original Infinity War and running like a...
When's Spider-Man 1-2. Out? Is it June or July or something?
I think it's July.
Okay, mid-July. Cool. I'm looking forward to that. Dude, I've flipped. I like Far From Home as a title now. Remember I came out firing on the show?
You said that about both titles. You hated everything until you saw it and you're like, oh, that's actually pretty good. I like that now.
Yeah. Well...
You're just the internet encapsulated in one human body. You just rage in fury until you see it and go, no, yeah, it's actually not that bad. I don't know why I was angry.
Yeah, I know. I do tend to overreact. Look, okay, cool. Now, Stu, we've got some fucking news here about this Batman thing. There's a lot of Batman. Well,
it's old news, but it's...
Okay, but I need to... I haven't spoken to anyone about it, so I need to get your... I put this to myself, because in the midst of my biggest fever, I saw Robert Pattinson was Batman, and I actually thought it was a figment of my imagination. I was like, is this real? And don't get it wrong, I am not slamming Robert Pattinson. I actually appreciate the guy's actually probably a lot better than what people give him credit for because of Twilight. Like, a series where I saw every film because Michelle is a massive Twilight fan. Okay, so I saw every fucking film in the cinema. It was a tough slog.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, yeah. She was a huge Twilight fan at the time. Now, I have heard reports that since Twilight, he's done quite a number of indie dramas and can actually act, which I sort of buy, you know? And the news is that he isn't 100% confirmed to play Batman yet. I checked this news just hours before the show. Nicholas Holt, Beast from X-Men 2, is screen testing as well. Both of them seem to be auditioning for the role. Now, I understand Robin Pattinson also brings in Stuart and a massive audience with him. I'm somewhat on the fence, but would prefer Robert Pattinson between these two. But where are you on this? Because I am very neutral on this. I'm not super one way or another. I'm cautious.
Well, like I said to you, this came out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it was announced originally that Pattinson was Batman.
Right.
That he had been cast as Batman.
Okay.
And then within a couple of hours, it seems like Nicholas Holt's people got angry and started saying, "We're still here."
Yeah.
Because
the studio didn't announce it, like Variety or someone did.
Variety, exactly. Variety said,
"Yeah," which is normally a reputable source for such a big announcement.
Reputable enough that when they say this person's been cast,
For Batman as well, you know, big role.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, we then had this 2-person race. Both of them saying, "Yeah, we're in the shortlist. It's just us."
Okay,
we're both trying for it. I don't think they're going for anything to do with Twilight. I think they're actually trying to distance themselves from Twilight pretty heavily.
But how can they do that when they're picking Robin Pattinson? I mean, he does have a massive fan base of, you know, Twilight fans.
Well, yeah, but Twilight fans and Batman fans really don't intersect. They are
I thought maybe they were trying to bring some of that
completely separate.
That's all I'm trying to think. They might be going for sort of the pretty boy, you know.
Audience. Well, I mean, they're naturally going to have that just because they've cast a younger, fit male as the lead role.
Yeah, but Robert Pattinson is known for one thing, which is Twilight. That's the one thing he's known for. Not the indie dramas no one's ever watched. Like,
well, how about Harry Potter, where he plays Cedric Diggory, like a pretty major character in
Fourth. Compared to Twilight, though. Twilight was enormous. We know this. It was a cultural landmark. Like, everyone's girlfriend went and saw it.
Well, yeah, but Robert Pattinson himself is desperately trying to distance himself from Twilight.
That I know, yes.
Like, he's heavily not said anything. Yeah. He's shunned away from any interviews. He's not done any kind of
campaign. What do you think about reunions? Because I'm not totally against him by any means. I'm actually cautiously optimistic. What do you think about Robin Pattinson as Batman? Like, where are you on it?
I actually quite like him. Okay. I think he's done quite a few really good films recently.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I prefer him to Nicholas Holt. What I've seen of Nicholas Holt, I'm not particularly enamored with. I've seen quite a bit of him, and I've never really thought he's that fantastic. I've often said Batman, it's not a hard role.
See,
I
think it is. I think Batman's a very hard role to get.
No, not to get. I mean,
But I mean, you've got to play both Batman and Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne, yeah. Okay.
Who are two quite different characters.
Sure.
So it's not easy walking that line between the two of them.
Who's your favourite Batman? In live action?
Probably Bale.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was very good. He's very good.
I think those Nolan films.
But only by a nose, only by a tiny part. I love Bale. I thought Bale was fantastic.
I think those are my favourite Batman films. So, I think Bale's probably my favourite
Batman. Bale and Michael Keaton both set the bar very high. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and then you had a couple in the middle that everyone wants to forget about.
Yeah, and some of that's on the directors of who made those movies too, and on the studios and stuff. Like, they mishandled the Batman franchise in the 90s.
Yeah, of course.
Funnily enough, Stu, when I first saw it, because Robert Pattinson had been mentioned before, so it wasn't out of the blue. Like, he has been mentioned as a Batman.
No, and so has Nicholas Holt. Like, they've both been on shortlists from most people for a long time.
How funny that they haven't decided and Variety released that news. Like, that's because you would have thought they would have got that straight from the studio, that sort of.
It is odd. I mean, if you look at IMDb, Robert Pattinson is Batman, apparently, in terms of filmography.
I'm open to it.
He's listed all around the place as Batman already.
Hmm.
But people have made very clear that Nicholas Holt is still in the running. Whether that's just to drum up more press and get the press cycle talking.
Just people talking kind of thing. Nicholas Holt might be auditioning for a completely different role in the Batman movie. He could be auditioning to play Two-Face or someone, you know?
I could see Nicholas Holt as like a young Penguin or something, maybe.
I quite like Nicholas Holt. Like, out of those two...
Having said that, obviously what I spoke about in 114, the rumours are that Penguin is going to be gender-swapped. They're going to have a female Penguin character.
No problem with that for me.
And a Catwoman as two confirmed villains.
Excellent.
Which I really like. I think those are two
Yeah.
Brilliant villains.
Catwoman can be used sympathetically as well. There's also
Catwoman runs both ways, exactly. Yeah. So you can run her in any scenario.
I tell you who I thought did a good Catwoman that doesn't get much praise. Was it Anne Hathaway, am I right in saying?
Yeah, Anne Hathaway.
I thought she was very good, actually. Michelle Pfeiffer is forever my Catwoman, but I thought Anne Hathaway did a good job.
It's a high bar to reach to get to Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer was incredible in Batman Returns.
Yeah.
For sure. But no, some people were saying you're gonna blast Rob Pattinson. By no means. I actually think the guy's quite good. And
for those that don't, like, it's completely understandable why people don't recognize him for anything other than Twilight.
Yeah.
Because pretty much everything since Twilight has been indie level.
Sure.
He's got no major releases under his belt since then.
Mm. That's a conscious decision, isn't it?
Absolutely it is. Yeah. It's him, from a professional point of view, he's showing other directors and other actors that he is not Twilight, that he is a serious actor that can be taken, you know, in any direction. He's done dramas and horrors and, like, he can do a lot of...
Is he British? Or was that an accent he was putting on in Twilight? I have no idea.
I think he's British.
Okay. I just had no idea what he was.
Look,
I'm to be honest, I'm actually cautiously optimistic because we know that Matt Reeves is going to do a noir film. That's what he said many times. I want more sort of gothic-centric one. I mean, maybe Rob Pattinson, if he has to bulk up a bit. I mean, what I saw him, it was spindly, but that was back in Twilight days. Maybe he's bulked up since.
Yeah, that was close to 10 years ago.
He was, like, anorexic looking.
Because that was... The last one in there was released in around 2012? Something like 2011?
That, yeah, something like that.
So he probably filmed it 2011, 2010.
I remember being in the cinema of the last one with the incredibly long and boring intro, like, title screen, and thinking, this is the last one I ever have to go see. Thank God. I was like, oh, thank God, this is finally fucking over. I
can't believe you watched any of them.
Well, it was my girlfriend. You had to take your girlfriend to this fucking movie.
You don't have to. You can,
well, if you want to have a relationship...
There's decisions you can make.
If you want to have the relationship, shoot. That's what I'm saying. If you want to have the relationship...
I mean, watching Twilight may be a step too far.
I like it, Stu. Stu takes our prisoners, ladies. You better...
I watched about 20 minutes of one of them. I don't know which one.
Oh, they're fucking terrible.
And then I gave up.
They're fucking terrible. Just even thinking about it depresses me. They were so fucking boring. Like, they really managed to make vampires boring, Stu.
They had vampires, they had werewolves. And I'm thinking, great, this is like Underworld.
Yeah.
Like, I'm loving it, and then I go watch it, and I'm like, I'm just going to go and watch Underworld.
I'm just going to go kill myself.
Let's go and get me some Kate Beckinsale and watch some Underworld, because that's
Underworld looks a lot better now in retrospect of, like, what it was up against.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Now, Stu, you had some teaser for Jessica Jones?
Yeah, they released a very short Jessica Jones Season 3 teaser.
Do we know who the person was talking in that?
No.
Okay.
I don't know if it's been released or not, but...
Okay. And this is June 14 for the new season, yeah?
Yeah, so 2 weeks' time we get the new season. This is the first Netflix show they've been able to market as the final season.
Yeah.
Because it was cancelled while they're in production. So hopefully that means that they could write or reshoot or get a decent ending for Jessica Jones.
Dane Lamont was saying as an extra on the show, the mood was incredibly down. He said the mood on the atmosphere on the set.
Oh, yeah, I imagine it would have been.
Yeah.
I mean, can we get you filming the third season of a show and knowing that you're not getting a fourth, everything's been canceled?
Yeah,
no,
that's it. Like, you better save that cash.
I mean, I'm hoping that the silver lining is if they knew it was going, they could figure out a way to give it an ending.
Yeah, rise to the occasion kind of thing.
Because you look at the last season of, like, Luke Cage and Daredevil and and you're like, well, they all ended on very open
endings, yeah.
To be continued pages, so...
Who knows? Maybe down the track they'll do some of those again anyway, you know?
I don't know. It sounds like they're completely dead and buried. But
yeah, look, I'm not too worried about it. Like, I think the Marvel Netflix shows were awesome in their time, but it was a very transitional phase. And now that it's all come back to Disney, they've got the Hulu service as well, we'll probably see all sorts of cool things, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just...
Did you cover...
Looking for something good.
On the Time Machine shows, did you cover the news about Ghost Rider? He's getting a show?
Yeah,
this is some major fucking news. There's a Son of Satan show coming and a Ghost Rider show coming on Hulu.
Yeah, there is.
And the Ghost Rider one doesn't... It uses the same actor that played Robbie Rodriguez in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it... Robbie Reyes, sorry. But it puts him in a... like, it's not the same Ghost Rider storyline. It's just the same actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I'm so fucking down for this.
That actor was really quite good in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, I'm so down for that show.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Ray and the guys on Inner Demons, and I was saying, finally a chance for my Punisher Ghost Rider team-up episode. You remember my Uber driver episode, Stu,
where
yeah, the worst pitch of all time.
I love bringing it up because of the pain it causes you. Your face.
I mean, it's one step above like ordering a pizza and him showing up. That's just terrible.
Not bad either, Stu.
That's just
not bad either. You're firing some gold tonight, my
ghost,
friend.
Ghost Rider Carl, little pizza logo on the roof.
You know, people call him Ghost Driver because he drives the car instead of rides a motorcycle.
Yeah, I've heard that, but people are idiots. It's Ghost Rider. That's his
name. I was just putting out what the kids are saying on the streets. You know, I'm hip to the lingo.
Yeah, you know, I don't listen to kids. Kids are idiots.
You remember I found out, I told Stu today, I found out what SMH stands for. I never knew what it stood for. It's shaking my head. People have been using this to me for years, and I've never known.
It's been around for a very long time.
I didn't have no idea. I was always just like.
I also heard you learn FML today. That was a new one for you.
Yeah, I'd never heard that one before in my life.
How old are
FOMO
you?
FOMO, I knew.
Well done.
Missing out.
Yeah, you got FOMO down.
That's the only one I know. Because I suffer from that sometimes. What was FML?
Fuck my life.
No, that's depressing. That's a depressing one, man. Jeez, like these kids are trending dark. Now, Stuart.
I can't believe you're critical of trending dark.
I'm not really. I sort of like that.
That sounds like your brand.
I sort of like they're going that way, frankly. I'm trying to be more PC, but it's very hard. Now, okay, so big changes on Batman. Tom King has been let go as of issue 85 after saying for last couple of years, he wanted to do a 100-run issue. He was let go. This was 1 week after he said they were going to change Batman so radically for a whole generation maybe he could never recover from. He got enormous internet blowback on that, and then DC took him off the title as of issue 85. And they have, though, said there's going to be an upcoming Batman Catwoman title with him writing and Clayman, who was doing Heroes in Crisis on art. So, Stu, what do you think of this turn of events? Apparently his numbers were in serious decline in the main title, Tom King.
Part of me loves when artists actually try and swing for the fences and writers try to do something different.
Sure.
And put their own spin on a character, sure. Especially one that's been around for as long as someone like Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand where the fans just want a consistent Batman title where it's their Batman forever.
Sure.
And they can read any issue and know what they're getting in for.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we've all had runs of our favourite characters where there are just periods where you don't read that character.
Oh, for sure. Like Deadpool at times is so mishandled you wouldn't go near it, you know?
Yeah, and I think Daredevil for me is one of those ones that's gone through massive ups and downs.
Oh, yeah. Some shocking Daredevil has been done.
Yeah.
And some brilliant Daredevil has been done.
Yeah, exactly right. But it swings from one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
So I think people are worried that they don't want Batman to do that.
I agree. I think Batman is like a blue chip stock. You don't wreck the character for a generation. Chuck Dixon did post a very lovely message on his thing talking about being fired. He's saying, listen, he was sort of open letter kind of thing to Tom King, saying, listen, I've been fired by the best of them, like by fax, by my calls not being returned, like a million different ways. It's part of the freelance comic book existence. The good news for Tom King, who I really had a lot of time to think about. I took a lot of shots of Tom King a few weeks ago on Heroes in Crisis, and I just read the last Heroes in Crisis, and it's unimpressive. That said, I, like you say, Stu, do like a lot of the stuff he was doing on Batman. I just think once he got to the wedding, he completely lost it. I think he mishandled the wedding, and I think he lost a lot of readers' sort of trust at that moment.
Yeah, see, I feel like a lot of these writers need to sell the studios, need to sell Marvel, need to sell DC, and basically sell them on this idea that they are going to go and do their own thing for 50 to 100 issues.
Yeah.
But they will write in a back door in case it all goes horribly wrong and the fans hate it, then the next writer can revert everything back to the good old days. And I think if they can manage to do that, put in a little back door that just says, if we have to, there is an escape hatch.
Sure.
But you've got to let me do what I want to do. And I wish these bigger companies would let these writers and artists do what they want to do, like really push it.
But what happens when the fans are reacting very violently the other way? Like Tom King was getting serious blowback from mainstream fans, you know, not just the crazy.
Yeah, but look at something like Dark Knight Returns is now considered one of the all-time greatest Batman.
Sure, but that was a four-issue limited series when it came out.
It was, but could you imagine them doing that style of artwork and bringing in that story into the main Batman?
Yes.
Story.
Frank
and could you imagine the absolute backlash that would have gotten and the hatred and vitriol after issue one?
Well, he did it at
because
the time.
It was so different to the main series Batman.
But when he did it at the time, that's what exactly happened. Everyone loved it. Like, Batman in the mid-80s when Frank Miller did that was still fairly conservative. You could still see a lot of his roots in the 70s kind of style.
Yeah.
And Frank Miller came out, did that, and he blew everyone away. He blew away the competition.
But it wasn't on the main Batman title.
Yeah, it was on
a separate...
premier sort of... Batman Year One was in the main title. Batman Year One by Frank Miller was in the main title of Batman. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I get your point, though. Like, it can be done. Frank Miller did it, and people emulated him. I think Tom King, probably where it went wrong PR-wise, was to say, I'm changing from a generation, we may never get him back like he was. I think that that moment, that was just a really bad PR move to make. And I think fans, casual fans, and people who just follow Batman really were reacting against it.
Well, enough the problem is, like, movie. Who knows? He may have done something for the better. Like,
the
change may have been exactly what Batman needed.
Yeah.
And it was going to reinvigorate the character, and all of a sudden we're going to get this renaissance movement, and we're all going to look back and go, wow, the early 2000s were really shit, but thank God Tom King came in and fixed it.
But the early 2000s weren't shit. They had Brubaker and Rucker.
No, but imagine if, like, what he did actually made it look that bad. Like,
I hear,
completely revolutionary and all this sort of, like, he could have, in theory, done that.
But... I get that.
And
but
now
I,
because his PR was, I'm going to change it forever, and people went, no, but I kind of like what I've got now.
Yeah.
It just didn't work.
I was quite comfortable with Batman and Mary Catwoman. I think that would have been a really good springing story point for years to come. Like, I actually thought that would have been really good for the character.
Yeah. And again, you've got that instant backdoor, which is just they could get divorced, annulled. Yeah.
Well, look, Morrison, when he came in, his big thing was bringing in, from the very beginning of his run, Damian, the son of Batman.
Yeah.
At the time... Morrison fan that you know I am, I was so just in my soul or in my heart against it. I thought, this is so stupid, it will suck. I didn't read it when it came out, and then I went and collected the first trade and fell in love with it, and I thought Morrison did it effortlessly and perfectly.
This is the same as any casting news about any movie on the internet. Mm. People initially just hate change.
Sure, I hear you.
And I think everybody hates change at some level.
Yeah.
But then once you get used to an idea or once you realize it's actually not that bad,
yeah,
things calm down and people can enjoy it. And
the good news is he does have the Batman Catwoman title, which I do want to read. And I do want to mention Ed Brubaker and Catwoman did a fantastic relationship with Bruce Wayne. It was loose and it was warm, but they had a real sort of like friendly slash tender relationship. He wasn't overused, but I always thought that was one of the best uses of the Catwoman-Batman relationship that I've seen done, and it was done very subtly. If you recall, Tom King's very, very used to that bat and cat sort of dialogue narration, which was getting a bit wearisome at the time.
Yeah.
I wonder if that will be as wearisome on a main title with the two of them together. Because Superman Wonder Woman is an example of a title that I thought was excellent out of New 52. You remember Superman was dating Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
And they had a title. I think Tomasi did it. It was fantastic. It was or Charles Soule, someone like that. It was really good. I will pick up Batman Catwoman and see what it's like. I'll give it a try for sure.
Yeah, we'll obviously try it for sure. Yeah, but
definitely. So, overall, Stu, I'm still sort of happy, though, we're getting a new creator on Batman. Because, I mean, this might sound bad, but I do think that Batman can be done better than Tom King's done it for the last, like...
Do we know who it is yet?
No announcement. No announcement. He's still doing it until 85, so he's still got, like, roughly 15 or more issues to go. Fortnightly. So, there's still some time. I hope they go back to basics a bit with it. I think I thought Scott Snyder was overrated. I thought the second half of Scott Snyder's run wasn't that good. I thought putting Gordon as Batman, I said to Jimmy Terzis the other day, was one of the worst decisions they've made in decades on Batman. And Jimmy Terzis was in complete agreement with me. I want someone. I mean, I know they're not going to bring back Brubaker or Rucker. They're gone. But give me someone telling some good, solid Batman stories. Give me the Dark Knight again. Don't give me any of this bullshit. Like fucking narration and stuff like that. Give me some fucking good Batman stories, you know? I don't know. I just feel that there's untapped material there. It's just my opinion.
Yeah.
We'll see who gets the gig anyway. It could be, you know, it'll be someone new. It'll be someone hot, you know, who's currently hit a couple of winners. Now, Stu, this is something I want to talk about with you. Throne Talk. Now, Michelle and I watched the last episode. We watched it a week late because I was sick. For me, Stu, one of the worst episodes of Game of Thrones I've seen. I thought it was dull. Michelle and I were both saying, this is a very dull episode. Where were you on it, man?
This whole season's been disappointing.
Thank you. Yes, I agree. Yeah.
And it's been disappointing for a few reasons. I did not enjoy this last episode.
No, neither did I.
I think they made a lot of decisions that I really don't like.
Sure.
But I don't necessarily hate what ended up happening with these characters.
Yeah, I get you.
But I hate the way it ended up happening.
The means they got there was just stupid.
Because it felt like it was all undone and fast forward.
Yes, agreed.
It honestly felt like they'd rushed to get this season out.
That ridiculous scene with Tyrion at the end. You know, just sort of like listing what everyone's going to do and go. And everyone's just like, oh, okay, we'll just follow what he's saying. Just to wrap it up real quick.
Well, as soon as he said, and I think Bran should be king.
Yeah, I just went.
Like, I was watching it with a group of friends and we all just went, oh, seriously?
Yeah, agreed.
The character that had literally done nothing this season.
It's such an annoying
This character. Season hasn't done a thing. And now all of a sudden he's
bait.
King.
He was bait in one episode. That was his big
one thing. Episode he was bait. Yeah, that's great.
But he was shit, man. He was so shit, dude. He was so shit.
But if you told me that George R. R. Martin was going to make Bran king in the end, I'm far happier with it in the books. Because Bran is a much bigger character in the books.
Yeah.
He's got much more advanced powers. You see from his point of view for quite a bit of it.
Sure.
And
makes more sense.
Everything's more developed with Bran.
Bran was fucking useless in the show.
The show, they didn't know how to write for him. They really didn't know how to write for Bran.
Yeah, I never enjoyed him.
And it was always a struggle watching
What him. Did you think of the scene with Jon Snow and Daenerys? I mean, I could see it coming a mile off.
Yeah, everything we could see a mile off. Yeah. It wasn't well written.
It wasn't a good season. And can I say this? To those people online, and I'm pointing the finger at Collider Jedi Council, who've been going on and on and on about Dan and Dave being so fucking great. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He said, don't forget, they didn't write any of this shit. And what they do write has sucked on Game of Thrones. Like,
well, I mean, look, I totally get why people are angry at Dan and Dave. But when they signed on to this show more than 10 years ago,
they expected to have all the books.
They actually went into it, and all the interviews they were doing before season one were saying, yeah, we know it's not finished yet, but by the time we get there, those books will have been released. And 10 years ago,
he's only released one book.
George R. R. Martin, he hasn't released any. He's done fuck all.
Yeah.
He has been so preoccupied with writing the show and spin-off series and other books.
Yeah.
He hasn't released a single novel.
Yeah.
And now
Dance of Dragons was the last one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was 10 years ago, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these two writers who were brilliant at what they did, which was adapting a novel for a screenplay.
Adapting.
Which is its own skill, and I think they really did that well.
They did extremely well.
If you look at the first 5 to 6 seasons of Game of Thrones, they are phenomenally well done and well adapted.
But when they're
I actually thought season 7 was a really good season of TV.
I enjoyed it.
It wasn't great from a Game of Thrones hardcore fan point of view.
No.
They didn't do service to a lot of things in the books that we feel should have been done.
Yeah.
But as a TV show, it really worked. It was probably the best season of TV.
Was that last season?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot. Last season was so much better than this season.
Phenomenally good.
Yeah.
But now they're suffering from... They've had a whole season where they've been writing these characters and they haven't really been going anywhere.
Yeah. Tread water.
So they've struggled now because they've lost all their momentum. But they've now also got this limited time frame to finish it.
Mm.
So they've written themselves into a weird corner.
Yeah, I've got to say, this was the worst season of Game of Thrones I've seen. It had some good moments, like the moment where Arya killed the Night King, I loved.
I hated that.
Didn't like it? Why?
Well, because we'd had 6 years of build-up for this Night King being the ultimate bad guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden he walks into a courtyard and then a character who's done nothing that episode...
Pops out from...
shows up and stabs him.
I liked it, but I liked
the assassin character. And I was like, where was the build-up? Where was Arya killing other walkers?
Well, if you didn't like that, that to me was the best part of the whole show.
Like, there was no build-up for the Night King, no build-up for Arya, and all of a sudden they just...
Yeah.
They're meeting and she's killing him.
Dude, it was a really disappointing...
It was the same as Cersei. For episode after episode, with her being the big villain.
And she did nothing.
And she walks downstairs and gets crushed by a very light dusting of one brick.
I once heard someone say that Napoleon, during Waterloo, spent all the time looking over the hill for his reinforcements, and that's what it felt like Cersei died doing, you know? Just sort of disengaged from the battle, you know? And just... Yeah, I agree. For such a cool character, for her and her brother to die like that, it just felt really sort of like... Lame.
But look, if she'd done something to get Dany off the dragon and to talk to her, and she was the one that killed Dany, That would have been an epic move.
That would have been great.
And then Drogon just blitzes them both with flames.
Well, Rice said to you, what about a zombie version of her brother killing her? You know? Something
but
like
there's
that.
So many versions of her dying or killing someone and then getting killed herself.
Yeah.
That really work.
Yeah.
The battle with the Hound and the Mountain as well.
Yep.
That just felt overdone.
Mm.
Like, there's a lot of disappointing moments that should have been amazing build-ups.
Overall, Stu, I can't even give this season a pass. It's like a 4 out of 10 season for me, you know?
See, I think I gave it a 5 out of 10 as a season. Yeah. It's watchable, and it's not terrible.
No, but it's not great either.
But you're left going, well, that's an ending, I suppose.
Yeah. I didn't like it, man. I was very interested to hear your thoughts. You're very much on the same side as me. It is what it is, man. Sometimes these big productions, they just don't stick the landing, you know? Now, a question I have for you. Do you think George R.R. Martin gave them detailed notes on how to wrap this up? Like how...
So, apparently, a reporter's come out in the last week saying that ending, with so Bran taking the throne...
Yeah.
Is exactly what George R.R. Martin told them he was going to do.
Okay, cool.
Now, obviously, he hasn't published the books yet, so he can still change it.
Sure.
But... 5 years ago, 6 years ago, something like that, was when he told Dan and Dave how everything ends and how he was going
to
write it.
Is it two more books he's got to do or just one?
Two more books.
Mm. Do you think he'll get to it?
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
And I hope now that the show's over that he's got a little more time to...
Well, isn't there a prequel series coming? Blood and Stone or something? Michelle mentioned it yesterday.
There is, yeah. There's at least... I think two that have been confirmed.
He put a book out recently, didn't they, about the Targaryens?
Targaryens,
whatever they're called. Yeah.
You got a poster up there on the wall.
But he did put out a book recently about them, didn't he?
Yeah, a full history of the Targaryens.
Okay. Now, does he write that or does someone else write that?
He wrote it, yeah.
So he writes it. So that kind of thing is what's taking his time.
Yeah, and that was a full novel. That was, okay. I don't know, 400 pages or something? Like it was a...
Oh, well, okay. So he's still engaged.
He's still writing. He's still very much in this universe and in this world.
He's earning a lot of money, which, I, to be honest, I feel good for him. I say good luck to him. The guy was an old-timer who worked on a lot of shitty sci-fi and stuff back in the 70s and 80s. I mean, he did the hard yards. I always like to see an author do this well, you know?
Yeah, you feel sorry for the guy when he's spent most of his life living in relative poverty compared to now.
That's it, man. You know?
And all of a sudden, he's very old and he can't spend all of the money he's earning.
He hit the lottery, you know? And that part of it, as a writer myself, I appreciate because it's rare, you know?
Yeah.
And he had that slice of luck. So I give him a bit of room on the whole he doesn't write fast enough because I get it frustrates fans, but I think you're talking about a guy who never would have envisioned this level of success, you know?
Yes, but that doesn't... I mean, we're talking something like 16 years between books.
I know, Stu, I know.
There's slow, and then there's that.
Well, J.R.R. Tolkien was very slow himself. He rewrote, like, Lord of the Rings multiple times, like, over a decade or so, you know? I think George R.R. Martin is like...
Yeah, he wrote 3 books over a decade.
Yeah, true.
George R.R. Martin's written 0 books over the last decade.
Yeah, true. Stu, I give him a bit of a pass, but I get like what you're saying. I get what you're saying, man. I get what you're saying. Now, moving away from that, I saw a really good movie this week. It was Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the animated movie. Have you seen this one, Stu?
No, we saw the trailers for it on the show.
It was really good. I gave it an 8.5. A lot of fun. The head design of the turtles are still weird. Michelle and I both commented on that. But honestly, they get the turtles, you know, personality is perfectly right. Batman's great. It's sort of based on the comics that I think DC and IDW put out. They've done the third series of the crossovers is now. Honestly, if you're a Batman fan or a Turtles fan, go check this out. It was a lot of fun. Shout out to Don from Batman Universe because he put out a tweet saying, this is really good. Go check it out. And based on his advice, I went and watched it with Michelle and we really enjoyed it. So, I mean, it's an exciting... She's like, Batman versus Turtles? Won't they be friends? I'm like, don't worry, they'll be friends. Like
it's like Batman versus Superman. They're going to be friends.
Yeah, there is a fight or two in there. It's actually a good one for Turtles fans.
About 2/3 of the way through, the real villain shows his head. Yeah.
Well, no, it's even less. They're friends most of the time. It's good stuff. Shredder's in there. There's a lot of good stuff. Ra's al Ghul gets a run. It's pretty good. Now, Stuart's Weekly Comics. We're not doing a trade this week. I should have mentioned at the start of the show. I forgot to. But I picked the comics this week, Stuart. I'm interested to get your reaction. The first one was Dick Tracy Forever, issue 1.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Oeming, the artist on Powers with Bendis, writes and draws this one. I have never found Dick Tracy's quite for me, which you might find surprising, Stu, because it's kind of noir and detective and stuff. But I did enjoy this issue, and apparently Michael Oeming is going to take Dick Tracy through the decades with each title. And I believe this one was the 30s. I enjoyed it. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. I mostly put in there to see what you thought of Dick Tracy Forever Volume 1.
This for me was incredibly boring.
Didn't like it?
It just didn't feel to go anywhere. I don't know. It's an old-timey character, which I get.
Sure.
It's an old-timey setting. It just...
It dragged.
It really dragged.
I wasn't actually so enamored with it that I thought I would like it more than I did. Shout out to Joe Wappo, formerly of Bruce Wayne's World, huge Dick Tracy fan. I will check out with Joe what he thought of this, because he is a Dick Tracy obsessive, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Dick Tracy's a great character, but yeah, I didn't think this was much, you know?
I don't know. The artwork was okay. It was nothing great, but it was okay. Sure. But yeah, the pacing was way off. Yeah. I feel like if you're a huge Dick Tracy fan, you don't need a lot of backstory.
Yeah.
And you can just jump into this kind of...
Well, he's just like a cop, really, isn't he?
Yeah, but it felt like any generic cop, like...
Yeah, he's...
And it was just slow...
Dick Tracy was kind of the start of the genre of the cop, you know?
Yeah, character. Exactly. Everybody since then has been a Dick Tracy.
Yeah, I know.
It's and now that funny. I'm reading the original, we're like, it's just like everyone else, but...
Yeah, I know. It's a bit like that. That's
quite possibly that, yeah, but it just felt flat. It was a 4 out of 10 for me.
Fair enough, man. Then we had the Catwoman Annual Volume 1. I found this ambitious and really fun. I was really actually happy to read this Catwoman Annual, and it makes me want to go and read the Catwoman series that Joel Jones has been doing. What did you think of it, Stu?
This was good fun. It's an odd take when you've got 3 or 4 different kind of points of view.
Yeah.
And all running at different times.
It wasn't probably done particularly well. Like, the organisation was a bit skew-whiff on this comic, I thought, at times.
Yeah. It's a little off on the storytelling beats, so you kind of... Once you get into the groove of something happening,
yeah,
it then jars you with this other point of view suddenly, and you lose all that rhythm.
But overall, it did end up telling a good story. Like, I genuinely enjoyed it. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. I could even be argued to an 8. I found this was ambitious and fun.
Yeah, I gave it a 7 out of 10. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Then we had Daredevil 6. Now, this I included this because I saw Chip Zdarsky, who writes the title, saying that he was billing it as new and exciting, a real change in direction for Daredevil. And he's like, and it won't be like Daredevil as Quinn, who's going to wear the cowl and all this kind of shit. So I thought, well, I'll pick it. I thought it was pretty cool, 7 out of 10. I didn't think it was amazingly different from anything Bendis or Brubaker has done before, except it's not quite as good. I thought this was a pretty generic but quite good Daredevil. I didn't see what the revelation was.
Yeah, it's a good opening. Like, yeah. I enjoyed this kind of new take on Daredevil. It's pretty fun. The artwork I really quite enjoyed.
Artwork was excellent.
Yeah.
The Kingpin looked truly menacing.
Yeah, he did.
Really menacing.
Really menacing. And the way he was walking around with Wesley, I really liked that relationship.
Yeah.
That was actually really well done.
What did you give it out of 10?
I gave it an 8.
Give it an 8. So I gave it a 7. I think I was expecting something more. I always fall for this. It's new and exciting and nothing has been done before. I read it and I'm like, this has been done before.
Yeah.
This has been done many times.
But it is new for the series. Like, it's a different take on it.
Now, yeah. Stu, I have my final comic. Now, Killer Groove, issue 1. The creators recently did an interview on John Sumter's Word Balloon, which I listened to religiously. It's an Aftershock book. Now, I thought this was excellent, and I thought this was very reminiscent of Brubaker's Criminal, probably a bit rawer than that, but I thought this was a genuinely good comic, and I would actually tell readers out there, if you're looking for a good number one this week, Killer Groove issue 1 is it. I very much enjoyed this. Now, Stu, this was very much in my genre,
sort of
crime with a little bit of mysticism. Where were you?
It felt a lot like what I'm expecting Tarantino's new movie to be.
Yes.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, yeah. This felt like in that kind of vein.
Sure.
Where it's kind of blur of 60s, 70s music and iconography.
Loved it, man. Can you imagine how much I was loving it?
Well, yeah, it's 100% you. It's 100% you. Look, it's an enjoyable read. It's not my genre, but I can still appreciate it. I
tell you what, this is a lot like Criminal. If you read Ed Brubaker's Criminal, this is kind of mirroring some of the beats.
Yeah.
And with its own flavour. To be honest, I don't even be giving this an 8.5 out of 10. I really enjoyed this one.
And I only gave it a 7, but yeah, okay. I can definitely see what you got there.
Yeah, I mean, so, Stu, there is no weekly trade this week. So now, I mean, this is our shortest show that I think we've done in history. I mean, remember, we've done 4 hours before. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that sucked.
The worst part was I was picking up speed at the end for you. She was
Yeah, but
asleep.
You slept through the middle 3 hours.
Now, well, let's do a thing where we decide what are we doing next week. Because I'm thinking things like Heroes in Crisis. I want us to do more Watchmen stuff, like Before Watchmen, Doomsday Clock. Shout out to Adam the Computer. Doomsday Clock 10, Stu, had a whole series of flashbacks of Superman and crucial points in Superman's timeline throughout the comics and how that is impacting on sort of what caused the New 52 and the rise of the Watchmen and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's a real meta critique. And I had it here somewhere, I've lost it, but Adam the Computer had a big thing about, like, what Doomsday Clock was supposed to be, because you and I read, like, the first 3 issues and we were like, this is nothing great. Remember?
Yeah, but remember, we'd realised by about issue 6, the reviews were getting really quite good.
Yes.
It was starting to tell a cohesive story, and we kind of realised that maybe it wasn't a month-to-month thing for us.
Yes, yes.
Because it didn't have quite the... I didn't quite enjoy the pacing as a month-to-month.
It's a trade read.
I feel like as a fortnightly or quicker, it would have done better for me.
Yeah.
So we both agreed that we'd do it as a trade and maybe two halves for the show or something.
Yeah. Should we do Watchmen first over 2 weeks and then do Doomsday Clock after that? You know, sort of so we get Watchmen and then go to...
I think that makes sense.
Thank you.
I mean, Watchmen's been out for far longer, so we...
It's not often that Stu says that makes sense to my comments. It's actually quite rare.
Yeah, normally it's, really, Dave?
What side of the coin are you flipping this time, Dave?
Oof.
What's it coming down as? But anyway, so next week, my pick, Stu, is we'll do the original Clone Saga of Spider-Man.
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, so we'll lock that in. Now, shout out to... Thank you to all the listeners for your patience. I know that we've taken a break. I was quite ill. Stu's recorded a couple of Time Machine episodes, which I'll put up as well. So you'll have quite a bit of content over the next week from Signal of Doom. Follow us on Facebook. Thank you to all our new Facebook people who've come on. You can follow me on Twitter at RedLantern2051. You can also pick up a copy of Demon Soul Fighter, currently on sale on Amazon for $2.99. Anything you over there, Stu, you want to sell? Is there your jacket, anything like, you know?
I'd rather wear my jacket, thank you very much. Sell my clothes on my back.
Yeah, and don't forget, I'm always available for the food court lunch. Oh, $30. you get have a full half hour of my time.
Yeah, there's how to waste $30.
That's $1 a minute.
That's a bad deal. That's what that is.
It's a bad deal.
It's a bad deal.
Walk away, son. Oof. It's a bad deal. All right, Stu. Good night, listeners. We'll see you next week. Thank you. See ya.